We thought like probably social power is something that is causing these differences, and social power that kind of emerged from this dominant subordinate relationship throughout history, right? Where the Bengalis are more powerful in the society than the Santals.
Bangladesh is home to over 54 indigenous tribes that coexist with the majority, the Bengalis, often giving rise to a subconscious, dominant, subservient social power structure. This power differential can trap the minority groups to various forms of exploitation. One of the reasons of the permanency of such a trap may be due to an aversion to compete against the majority. Do minority groups compete differently than the majority? In this episode, we turn to Abu Siddiqui, an assistant professor at King's College London, for an answer to this question. Welcome to Banglanomics, a podcast series to propagate economics research for the masses and students of economics with a focus on Bangladesh.
Hello, everyone. Today we have Abu Siddiqui with us, who's right now at King's, and I'm really happy to have him for a conversation here. And I think the paper that he worked on is fascinating.
Thanks so much, Adnan, for inviting me. This actually looks quite exciting, and I'm really looking forward to it.
Before we talk about the paper, I want to ask you first, what motivated you to pursue an academic career specifically in economics?
I actually had economics in school, and I really liked it. I think the idea that really fascinated me was the concept of scarcity of resources and how people are forced to make choices. And that was quite interesting. And then I decided, okay, I want to study economics further. So I got into undergrad in economics. The more I learned, the more I got interested. And at one point, I realized that I think I can use my knowledge of economics to make some impact in the world. So I applied for my PhD, like jointly with the master's program, because you can actually apply for scholarships that way for master's. So yeah, so I think during undergrad, I decided, yes, I want to be a researcher, want to work in economics, especially like development economics.
Thank you. And that's actually a very good point that you mentioned, like the joint degrees do have a lot more scholarships. I was wondering if you could put forward for our audience what the objective of the paper was and how the role of ethnicity really weaves into the story.
Yeah, So I grew up in Bangladesh, and I grew up in Rajshahi region, which is like home to all the Santals. I kind of grew up with them, and I know like how ethnic minorities are treated in the society. There is this dominant subordinate kind of relationship where the ethnic majority is like the dominant, whereas the minorities are the subordinate, and the relationship is not very harmonious. So yeah, so that kind of inspired me to work on ethnicity. And my sister is an anthropologist, actually, and she used to work with the Santals in that region. And I was in school, and I was really fascinated by all the work she was doing, all the field work, all the. So I got really interested in ethnicity and the relationship actually between the majority and the minority. So the idea is about competitive preference, and competitive preference means like when someone really likes competing with others. So this is like a preference where, yeah, so someone might be really willing to compete with others, whereas others might not be that willing to compete, right? And what literature suggests that the gender difference in various outcomes, like in education outcomes, labor market outcomes, some of it can be explained by competitive preference, where women dislike competing with men, whereas men really like competing against women. That kind of explains why women are doing so poorly in various like labor market outcomes and so on. And just like women, we thought ethnic minorities also fare very badly in various outcomes, labor market outcomes, education, and so on. And we kind of use that idea to check like, okay, can competitive preference explain this difference we are observing? Because once again, this is a context where there is a dominant group, there is a subordinate group for many, many years, right? And we actually wanted to check in this context, how is this competitive preference shaping up among these people, among the, both the majority and the minority? So that is basically the objective of the study.
Thank you. Yeah, that actually ties in really well with how you title the paper. It's competitive preferences and ethnicity, experimental evidence from Bangladesh. And I'll put a link to the paper below this in the description. Before, again, we dive into the study itself and the methodology, since you mentioned about the ethnicity, the minorities and the majorities as well, that I think gives a good segue to talk about who were really the study participants and specifically, why did you choose to work with them?
This study took place in the Rajshahi region, which is in the northwestern part of Bangladesh. And the Rajshahi region and the nearby districts are actually home to the second largest ethnic minority in Bangladesh, and they are known as Santals. The reason, again, we chose them because we wanted a context where the relationship is very dominant subordinate. There is one ethnicity who's like the dominant group, another ethnicity which is the subordinate group. And the dominant group is faring very well in various outcomes, whereas the subordinate group is not. So all of these things, actually, all of this criteria actually matches with Santals and Bengali in this context. That's why we decided to test our hypothesis here.
One aspect that might be new to some of our audience is a lab in the field experiment. If you could briefly explain what a lab in the field experiment really is.
Yeah. Usually like lab in the field experiment is basically a combination of lab experiment, which is done in lab. I'll explain that in a bit. So lab in the real world settings. So you actually have a lot more external validity, basically. What is a lab experiment? So we do experiment to check, let's say we have some hypothesis that if we give someone some training about, let's say, a website, and we don't give another group no trainings, we just assume that the person who is given training would, their skill would improve, let's say. And we can always test these things in an experiment, right? We randomly pick people so that these people don't have the choice to actually decide whether they want the training or not, because if they do, then it'll be biased. So that's why as a researcher, we get to choose who gets to be in this group versus that group, which is basically done completely randomly. And this randomization is done in different kind of experiments. So there are field experiments like randomized trials, and then there are lab experiments which are basically done on a computer, like in a computer lab, basically. And these are called experimental labs in many universities. But the problem with these lab experiments is that previously, this was done mostly with university students and mostly done in, let's say, Western countries and so on, right? So over time, the methodology expanded. All the big people in economics, they actually expanded the idea and they tried to test, okay, can we do these similar experiments in other settings, in the field, in developing countries and so on, right? And that's when the lab in the field experiment or the concept actually came in. It was basically setting up these lab experiments, but in a context which is, let's say, non-students and mostly done in developing countries. So it's, for example, in villages where people don't know how to use computers. So you have to use something else to measure their choices and so on.
So on to your experiment then. How was the experiment set up? Because there were three treatment groups and there were several stages / tasks.
Yes, the way we set it up is we set it up in villages, of course. Research assistants actually went door to door or even in the field where, because these are mostly farmers and they were inviting them. And if you come to the school on this day at this time, you can participate in this very interesting work and you can earn money. Just for participation, you can earn this much. And based on how you do in the task, you can earn even more. So it was very attractive to these people, basically. So they all lined up outside. Basically, they entered the room one by one. We allocated them to this table versus that, which was basically randomly allocating them to these different treatment arms. So we had three different treatments. One was we wanted to check how people's willingness to compete against their own type or their own ethnicity. And we call these homogeneous groups. So it's homogeneous based on their ethnicity. And then there were two other mixed groups where majority and minority people together, but in one condition, we basically kind of mimic the real world situation where Bengali or the ethnic majority people were the numerical majority in the group, whereas the ethnic minorities were the numerical minority. So it's kind of not exactly the same, but it's kind of mimicking the real world, actually. And in another group, we kind of made it opposite, where the ethnic minority became the numerical majority and the ethnic majority were the numerical minority. And the reason we did that is because, first of all, we are interested in choices in these mixed groups, but we are also interested in choices like how these choices are affected by their exposure to the other group, right? So when a minority is exposed to more majority in the group, they might behave differently compared to if they're a majority and they're exposed to not that many majorities, basically.
Thank you. Yeah. And the task that you guys selected for them to perform, I thought that was very clever.
So in this experiment, they had to do a simple task in three stages. So there was stage one, two, and three. So we had to select a task which was very, very neutral for these people. And also they should be familiar with it. That means they were farmers, mostly rice farmers. So we selected a task where we mixed rice and lentils together in 50-50 proportion, and we had to ask them to separate lentils from rice. So for each lentils they separate, they were paid some money. But if they by mistake separate some rice, the money got deducted. So they had to be very careful. And it was like only for a minute or 2 minutes. I don't remember the exact time, but it was for a very short time. And it was basically measuring their performance in a task. So in these contexts, this task is very, I think it's not gender neutral, but in this case, it's very ethnicity neutral because it's all participants were men. Yeah, we didn't have any women participants. And all of these men actually never cooked at home or never separated these stones from rice and so on. So it was very, very new task for these people. So we had these three stages. The first stage is called piece rate, where they were paid based on the number of lentils they could separate. That means if they could separate, I don't know, 50 lentil, they were paid based on that. So they were not, there was no competition, no nothing. So it was just piece rate. The next stage was the tournament stage, where tournament means there were like each group had six participants in it. And the tournament is whoever separates the most number of lentils would be the winner and would get a lot of money, whereas the others who are losers, they don't. So this kind of introduces this winner take all or this tournament scheme. And the reason we had these two is because, first of all, we wanted to check if there is any ethnic differences in terms of performance or in terms of the task. Is the task biased or unbiased? And second of all, we wanted to make sure that these people get the flavor of both piece rate and tournament schemes before they make choices in their third. Because if they don't, then they don't know like how, first of all, they don't have an idea that what is their ability or productivity in the task. And second of all, they don't know like how, let's say, winning in piece rate feels like, winning a tournament feels like, right? So then comes the third stage, which is our main basically stage for this study, which measures competitive preference, where these people were asked before performing the task whether they would like to be paid according to the tournament or the piece rate. So tournament is the competitive scheme, whereas piece rate is a non-competitive scheme. And that kind of measured their choice, whether they want to compete or not compete, basically.
Okay, so in this case, could you explain what you guys find from the first two stages, and then something happens when you guys move on to the third stage?
The first thing is, in the first stage, we don't find any difference in terms of ethnicity. So this is like a non-competitive situation. Everyone is performing just to win some money, right? And what we find is that both ethnic majority and minority, they perform equally, which kind of suggests that this was a very ethnically neutral task. When I say not different, it just means that not statistically different. There was some difference, but it was not statistically significant. And then in the tournament, we find again the same thing. So in terms of tournament, we find that both ethnicity, both ethnic groups actually performed equally. And when we disaggregate the findings, I think in the tournament, we find that both groups become more and more competitive when they are a numerical minority in the group, right? So when they becoming numerical minority can remind them of many things, right? So it can remind them of, okay, I am the only person, or very few of us are competing against such a big crowd, we should do good, and so on. So we actually see that pattern, and it's present among both ethnic majority and minority. But then in the third stage, when we see the choice, basically, we see that now the pattern kind of completely changes for the ethnic minority. So the majority stays the same. So when they are a numerical minority, they compete the most. When they are a numerical majority, they compete a bit less. And when they are completely homogeneous, that means they're only competing against their co-ethnics, their choices were the lowest, basically. And then for the Santals, it was the opposite. So when they are competing against only Santals in homogeneous group, their entry was the highest. So they were choosing to enter competition the most. And then the more Bengalis entered the group, that means when Santals are now a numerical majority, then their competitive preference drops compared to the homogeneous group. And then at the end, when they became a numerical minority, their competitive preference dropped even further. What we think is that when the minorities became numerical minority, which is kind of mimicking the real world situation, right? That kind of reminded them of this dominant subordinate relationship, that I am a subordinate, I'm from a subordinate group, and I shouldn't be competing with the majority. Whereas for the majority, they were competing the most against in those groups. And it kind of, when they were a minority, it kind of reminded them that they are the dominant group, and they should act dominantly against the minority, which we think was the triggers affected these choices.
I thought that was very interesting, because it's kind of like it's subconsciously ingrained from their birth. They've been facing this around their culture throughout their lives. So it kind of gets embedded in their willingness, exposure, their preferences, structures as well. So I thought that came out brilliantly. One of the few variables that were significant was the intercultural competence. Hmm. And I was curious about what that variable really represented.
Intercultural competence is basically, we got this from the literature, it's just about how much you know about the other culture, right? But what we were trying to capture here in this study is we used it as a proxy for how much they kind of socialize or interact with others. Because if they are interacting a lot with others or socializing a lot with others, let's say Santals socializing a lot with Bengalis, they would know a lot about them. So the higher the number in this index, the more they must have socialized. So that was kind of the proxy idea we had. And when we control for that in the regression, I think it's positive and significant, right? So positive and significant would mean that people who basically interacted more or knows a lot about the Bengalis, they chose to compete with them more, right? And if they were completely unknown or didn't know much about the other people, they were kind of afraid to compete. And here comes the other thing. So, like I said, we invited people from these villages and so on. And what ended up happening is many of these participants knew each other from before, right? So they were either from same villages, from nearby villages and so on, and many of them knew each other. Since I know like who's sitting next to me, and probably I'll be competing with them. And if I know these people as a Santal, I might think like, yeah, I know this guy, and that's why I might have chosen to compete more, and so on. For Bengalis, it didn't matter much. And I actually don't know why. Maybe for them, knowing about Santal doesn't matter whether they choose to compete or not.
I was thinking if you could say something about the potential mechanisms through which this operated.
So in terms of mechanism, we thought like probably social power is something that is causing these differences. And social power that kind of emerged from this dominant subordinate relationship throughout history, right? Where the Bengalis are more powerful in the society than the Santals. And in order to test that, we actually, I remember looking at people's income and their land holdings. So basically their wealth or material well-beings as the main channel, because these people, these participants knew each other. It's very possible that they knew whether the Bengali is a rich Bengali or a poor Bengali and so on, whereas the Bengali knew whether the Santal is very poor or rich and so on, right? Our experiment was very organized in the sense, based on ID numbers, we knew who was sitting again around whom, right? And we could check like for each person, they are exposed to which people and what were their income like. So we actually explored that. Income was capturing some effect. Others' income was making people to compete less. In this case, social power, it's a very, very difficult concept. We think like one aspect of social power is someone's income, and that was actually affecting people's choices to compete with others. There are like other mechanisms in the sense that people might not be willing to compete against others because their confidence level is not that much, right? So we measure confidence. Competing can be a risky thing to do. And we wanted to also rule out the risk channel, basically. And we also have an incentivized risk game. And we also rule that out. So at the end, we ruled out all these potential mechanisms, and we still have the effect. Yeah. But the thing is, social power is multidimensional, and we didn't capture many aspects of social power in it. So there can be some social power or some types of power that is unobserved, and that might be affecting the choices.
If you could suggest one policy to policymakers of Bangladesh, something based on the study that you guys did, what would it be?
We find that intercultural competence or knowing others is a big factor in terms of like whether the minority chooses to compete with majority, right? So if they knew the other person very well, they were more likely to compete. And what happens in this context is that the majority, the dominant and the subordinate group, they don't mix very well. For example, in our survey questions, we found that they don't invite others to their home, or they don't go to their homes, or because they also have different culture, they have different festivals, they don't attend each other's festivals and so on, and they don't invite others. So in terms of socialization, it's very poor in this context. And I think one way would be to have policies where majority, minority can freely mingle with each other, mix with each other, get to know each other, right? So if they become more, if they become friends with, let's say, minority, they might change their perception, change their ideas about them. And maybe the minorities, if they get to know the majorities, they would feel like more included, and they would feel more open to competing. Even like, so in this case, it's not like competing in the game. Think about like applying for education or at universities where I know like there are thousands of ethnic majority students there and I have to compete with them, right? So, or in a job where it's dominated by ethnic majorities and the minorities might be more willing to apply for those kind of jobs and so on.
Since you are an early career, and I'm really happy to have you here today, I think your suggestions and advice and feedback will be really valuable to students who are looking to pursue a career in economics, especially in the research track. What advice would you give them?
Oh, there are many things they can do because economics is really, really interesting. And since they are already studying economics, very, very well done in terms of the choice. And the way I think they can polish themselves is by improving their technical knowledge in terms of like economic theories, the methodologies, and so on. It's extremely valuable, and this is the time to actually work on these things. And second is try to discuss ideas or try to get like mentoring from your professors, or for example, in this case, Adnan. Or if you're my student and you're watching this, don't feel shy. Reach out. Finally, I would say engage in research very early because if you are an undergrad, you will find that there are opportunities to work as research assistants for professors. When I was an undergrad, I remember doing this volunteer research assistant works for my professors. It was basically just sorting data and all these things, but I learned a lot, especially from discussions from the advice and so on.
Fantastic having you here today, and thank you for the conversation. And I look forward to seeing you in person.
Me too. And thanks so much for inviting me. And it was really fun, actually. Thanks. Bye, everyone.